welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 209 of the podcast, and it is the 12th of February 2015 as I record this. Can you believe the year's going by so fast, and I am rapidly approaching 40. So I'm feeling the passage of time at the moment. And just, you know, to share personally, I'm at the point of trying to decide what to do to mark this momentous occasion. And all my siblings, I'm the eldest of five, all my siblings have tattoos except me. And so currently I'm sort of tossing up whether to do that, go with tattoos. And at the moment on Pinterest, I am pinning away lots and lots of tattoos. So anyway, there's a little share, probably overshare, but there you go. It's my podcast. But to move on to the important things that you care about, today I have an interview with Chris Ducker, whose book Virtual Freedom is all about outsourcing and how to use virtual assistants. And we talk about some of the tasks that you can free up to focus on writing. And this is something I have struggled with for a number of years, and I'm certainly thrilled with my wonderful VA these days, and I try and outsource a number of tasks. So we talk about that in the interview. I think you'll find it useful wherever you are on the journey. And if you are feeling overwhelmed by the amount of things that you have to do as an indie author, I certainly recommend the interview. But before we get into the interview, a couple of things I wanted to mention. Last show, I talked about the new Amazon KDP Select advertising promotion, which I was excited about, and lots of people were too. And I pulled Career Change. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of not being exclusive, but I pulled my least selling book, Career Change, off the other platforms for 90 days and put it into KDP Select. And I've tried the promotional spend thing, and essentially haven't been able to spend any money because it's just not working. So, and I'm in a couple of forums, haven't found anyone who's been able to actually get any benefit from this paid promotional activity. I think it's probably great for physical products or products with a higher margin, but you know, book sales are very small margin. But I would love to hear from anyone who has been able to sort of really get a good benefit from that pay promotion, pay-per-click, basically. Okay. Other thing I wanted to mention was Mark Coker on the Smashwords podcast written a great post on the ebook as annuity, and basically calculating a little drip feed on income over the long term, which makes it far more exciting. And Mark says, you know, your book may be more successful than you think if you calculate it as an annuity, you know, a small drip, drip, drip over the years. And, you know, obviously for many people, the spike of, oh, well, depends what kind of contract you get. But with traditional publishing, you would tend to get a spike income, sort of three payments on a six-figure deal, for example, spread over a couple of years. So you get spikes. But then often that's the income disappears for a book. So it's an interesting, if you sort of compare the models, but the little streams of income that together become a river that I control is what makes me personally happy. And I'm also a prime example of this. If you've been following me for a while, I post, since I left my job in September 2011, I post a yearly update of my income and, you know, break it down and talk about another year as an author entrepreneur. And I'm very excited because I've just end of January, I mean, I don't give exact figures, I think that's a bit, you know, over the top, but I'd like to break it down for you and demonstrate that these little amounts add up over time. And so I'm definitely on track for my financial targets, which are for me based on lots of little trickles. So I hope that gives you some encouragement for your own books. Go and look at that post on ebook as annuity on the Smashwords blog, and you'll see what I mean. It's really good. And the other thing is, I also wanted to mention, because in this podcast we're talking about this sort of idea of letting go a bit, I have a new podcast discovery, which I wanted to mention, which is On Being with Krista Tippett. And I found it through Brain Pickings, which is a brilliant site. And there's an interview with Mary Oliver, who wrote my favourite poem, Wild Geese. Maybe I'll read that one day on the podcast, but that is a poem that I love very much. And yeah, so I've been listening to that, and it's good. And I feel that I love listening to a lot of podcasts, as I know you guys do. And I know the indie author scene sort of takes its toll. And if you listen to shows with people who are more successful, and you sometimes get a bit swept away, or, you know, that comparisonitis, or, you know, you forget what's really important. And there are a lot of very important things in the world, and some deeper aspects of life, which sometimes I tackle. I've had a few religious interviews, I guess. But yeah, I think it's an interesting sort of, anyway, I digress. But On Being with Krista Tippett, I recommend. And I've also been using the Headspace app for guided meditation since the new year. And I've definitely been finding that helpful as well. Not that I am capable of slowing down, it seems, but at least my brain is a little quieter. And for example, this morning, it's now 2 o'clock my time in England. And since Harper State this morning, I've just been enmeshed in research for my next book, which I'll just talk briefly about. It's quite funny with the timing, because of course, right now is the 50 Shades of Grey release this weekend. So sex mad kind of everywhere. But what's funny is I've started researching Deviance, which is my London psychic book, number 3 in the series after Desecration and Delirium. And Jamie and Blake are investigating a series of murders on the darker side of London's sex industry. because I'm really fascinated with Crossbones, which is a graveyard for the outcast dead, which I think is just a brilliant title, probably a good book title, but my books begin with D. But also I went on this tour, well, I made a tour, my husband came along, and we did sort of the ancient sex tour of South Bank, London. And the church actually used to run the brothels on South Bank with the so-called Winchester geese. And much of the splendid Georgian London and Bath and these places is built from proceeds of the sex trade. And so I'm fascinated with this, because London is both sinner and saint, as we all are. So, and it's going to be interesting, because of course I'm not writing erotic fiction, I'm writing murder mystery, suspense, paranormal, supernatural, with a shade of, more a shade of horror than erotica. So I'm fascinated by the, how I'm going to make that work. So anyway, that I am day 3 into research at the moment, because my other news is the rewrites for One Day in New York are done, and the book is on pre-order on Amazon and Kobo, and will launch March 13th, coming soon on iBooks. And yeah, One Day in New York is completely different. It is Jake Timber, my first book with a male protagonist, doing his thing in New York, and again, supernatural elements. I won't give any more away, but yeah, I'm excited. So that's done. That's coming in March, and yeah, into Deviance. So you'll probably hear me musing about these things as we go forwards. On more practical things before we move on, just a reminder, I'm speaking in Charleston, South Carolina at the PubSense Summit, March 22nd to 24th. I'm really looking forward to that. And by then I will either have a tattoo or a very interesting hair. So you can find out details of the PubSense Summit at pubsensesummit.com, and that's going to be a really interesting conference. I've heard a lot of good things about it. It's apparently quite business orientated for indie, so that'll be cool. I'm also speaking at various events at London Book Fair, And that's in April. And also we have an Alliance of Independent Authors Fringe event, which will be fun that week. Plus I'm running my own full day seminar in London on May the 9th on how to make a living with your writing. So you can go to thecreativepen.com/speaking for all the links on where I am and what I'm up to. And I will almost certainly be in New York for Thriller Fest. I'll also be in Matera in Italy for the Women's Fiction Conference, Women's Festival, something like that, in September. So yeah, I'm really excited about all the travel. Plus, I'm off to the Shetland Islands next weekend. Who would have thought? The Shetland Islands are essentially Norway. They're Scottish, obviously, part of Scotland, part of the United Kingdom, but are very far north. So that'll be exciting. Okay. Right, so that's probably enough chat for now. This podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, if you want to check it out and get a power pack upgrade. And it's very interesting because one of the things that Chris Ducker and I talk about in this podcast is superhero syndrome, where you try to do everything yourself. For example, you might learn how to use Photoshop so you can do your own book covers when you should be writing and leaving that to the experts. So really, it's about how much your time is worth. And I definitely speak from experience because I have flirted a number of times with learning how to design book covers, but learning to let go. So obviously, a brilliant book cover will help you stand out in the crowded market. And you can also get matching logo, website design, merchandise like t-shirts, which I'm still thinking about, and bookmarks and other things that will help get your work out there. And with 99 Designs, there's no risk, as you only pay when you're happy with what is created, and you get lots of choice with multiple designers submitting work. So I got a custom illustration for Gates of Hell, and I actually got an email from a reader the other day who got a print copy of Gates of Hell and said how awesome the cover design is, which it is, and it's got loads and loads of bits to it. But the illustration was done by 99 Designs, and I used the competition while I was writing the book. So the design of 99 Designs actually drove the writing of and the design of the key to the Gates of Hell is in the book. So that's very cool. And I love the kind of collaboration that we can do as creatives in this new internet world. And my designer, my 99 Designs designer, was from Brazil. So I just love that. It's very cool. And I also particularly like the poll aspect where people can vote on what they like and leave comments, which really helps because sometimes you making a decision on your own is not the right thing. You are not your market. Okay, so you can get a power pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background, and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and, the technical side of things. But my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to the people supporting on Patreon and to new sponsors, Payam Por Bike. I hope that's how you spell it, Payam, how you say it, and Ashley Person. So thank you to Payam and Ashley, and to everyone who's supporting me on Patreon. And Patreon, patreon.com/thecreativepen, if you'd like to support just a few dollars, even a dollar per show, less than a coffee a month if you're enjoying the podcast. Or of course, you can buy my books. One Day in New York is out now. Okay, thank you, and let's get on with the interview with Chris Ducker. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Chris Ducker. Hi Chris.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. It's lovely to have another Brit on the show. Just a little introduction.
So good. So good. It really is.
It really is. But Chris is a serial entrepreneur, a virtual staffing expert, blogger, podcaster, and author of Virtual Freedom, How to Work with Virtual Staff to Buy More Time, Become More Productive, and Build Your Dream Business, which is a hell of an SEO title.
Well, actually, you know, the book, you know, because as we're on the subject, the book, the original title of the book was, let me get this right. It went from The Freedom Factor, which I thought was, that was the original title. I thought, that's great. But the publishers didn't agree with that one. And then it went to, I think it went to Virtual Inc. or Virtual Incorporated at one point. And then we settled on the whole virtual freedom thing after God knows how many emails.
It's a great title. But, it's really, you know, I bought it for sure. But first up, before we get onto the book, just tell us a bit more about your background and what your business looks like today and where in the world you are as well these days.
Yeah, well, I'm in the Philippines. I've been based here for 14 years. I live in a place called Cebu, which is the fastest growing economic hub of the country. It's about an hour south of Manila, which is the capital of the country. And I've been here 14 years. I mean, you know, to go back, I'm just a sales and marketing guy, honestly speaking. And I don't try and, you know, have any delusions of grandeur on that. I was in the publishing business in the UK for a long, long time, came over here and, you know, did some consulting work, took a job with an infomercial business over here, which did a lot of work with people over in the United States, which ended up to another opportunity over there. And that was the last job I ever had. I was working for actually a very, very nice guy away from work in the infomercial game. But once he put the work hat on, he was just the biggest micromanaging nightmare in the world to deal with. And I was actually on a plane coming back from Miami, which is where he was based. I'd been there for a month. And, you know, I'm supposed to be the international sales and marketing director of the company, but I'm doing script writing, I'm doing voiceovers, I'm doing, you know, casting sessions and all this stuff. And I just had enough. And I was on the way coming back and 37,000 odd feet, I wrote my resignation letter and hit the send button when I landed in Hong Kong for my connecting flight. And that was that. Henceforth, my entrepreneurial career began.
Yeah. And now it's just tell us what it mainly is now, what your business is now.
Well, I mean, I'm engulfed in the outsourcing business. That's what I do. I have just now over 300 employees working for me here. We have a international call center where we work with very large corporations all around the world, majority of which are American, but pretty much all around the world. We have Virtual Staff Finder, which is what a lot of people know me for online, which is the VA or virtual assistant matchmaking service. And then, you know, we have a co-working space called Location 63, which actually is in the process of being converted right now into more call center space for the call center. I'm kind of shutting it down and moving it across a little bit and pivoting a little bit with it. But yeah, they're the three businesses. But, you know, the majority of the time that I have now in terms of work, I'm focusing on, you know, creating content, marketing that content, putting together, you know, presentations for keynotes that I do and, you know, doing crazy stuff like writing books and blogging and podcasting and all that stuff. And that's the stuff that I really enjoy doing. That for me is where the real energy comes from.
Mm. And that, I think that's what I love. It's like you have this really big business with 300 employees, which to me sounds just, you know, my aim was never to have an employee, which is kind of completely the opposite.
But, yeah.
But yet we do the same things in terms of marketing. You know, it's the same things to market a book as it is to market a massive business.
Absolutely.
Which is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So let's talk about the book because it's a fantastic book. I recommend it to everybody, regardless of getting into the VA stuff, which we will. But the first thing you talk about is superhero syndrome, which I, you know, as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, I've so got that, you know. So can you explain what is superhero syndrome and, you know, how do we stop it?
Well, you know, superhero syndrome is what the majority of entrepreneurs are suffering with, or at least do suffer with at some point in their entrepreneurial pursuits, right? And it really comes down to doing everything yourself and believing that no one else can do it better than you. Superhero syndrome is when if you can learn how to do something yourself, you will do that to save a couple of bucks instead of paying somebody that knows how to do it right out the gate. I often joke that superhero syndrome is also when when the word recharge only actually applies to your mobile phone, because you're on the go and working so much and doing all this stuff. But honestly speaking, I mean, that's what it is. It's the inability to let go of even just very simple tasks to other people so that you can focus on the stuff you really should be focusing on as a business owner, a one-man band entrepreneur, a blogger, a writer, you name it.
And that's great. And I should point out that although I never wanted another employee, I have 13 contractors who I work with. So
there you go.
So I just thought I'd put that in. So I'm not an absolute nightmare. But your book actually did help me move into working with a VA. So let's just first explain, in case people don't know, you know, what is a VA and what is it not?
Wow, there's a can of worms that's just been busted open right there. A virtual assistant has, you know, the term VA has changed a lot. And we have our illustrious, 4-hour work week leader, Tim Ferriss, to thank for bringing the term virtual assistant into the fray for the average Joe, you know, small business owner kind of thing. But outsourcing is nothing new. It's been around for decades. People have been outsourcing IT, you know, setups right the way down to, you know, HR, accounting, you name it. And so it's nothing new, but, you know, for us modern day entrepreneurs, particularly people that are doing business online, a VA is not only a time saver, but they can literally be a lifesaver as well. Because like a lot of other entrepreneurs out there, I was working those 60, 70 hour weeks only 6 years ago. I was doing that and I burned out. I hit a brick wall at 180 miles an hour and something had to change. And so we started really delegating like crazy all the different roles, not tasks, roles. I was wearing so many hats that it was obvious why I broke down when we started really looking at it. So a VA helps you ultimately run, support, and grow your business in a number of different ways. And there's a lot of different virtual staff, you know, options that are out there.
And I think probably what I meant by that and what I learned very quickly, I thought I was going to find a virtual me, like a double, and that one person would fulfill that role. But that's a fundamental mistake, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, well, here's the beautiful thing about it. There is only one Joanna. There's only one Chris. And for you guys watching or listening, there's only one of you as well. And you cannot replicate yourself. It's not possible to do it. You can replicate the way that you do certain things and handle certain tasks or processes, but ultimately you're not going to be able to replace yourself. It's just not possible. But you can get very, very smart with the things that you do start delegating. You know, and there are certain what I would class as low-level tasks that a lot of online entrepreneurs, regardless of what niche they're in or niche, I can say niche now because
yes,
I'm with another Brit. Usually
niche.
I'm being interviewed by Americans, so I have to say niche,
no,
you know what I mean?
Niche.
It is niche.
It is.
Bloody niche, it is. so you know, and you know, regardless of what industry or space you're in, all of these things that suck our time up each day, they're the things that are actually stunting our growth. So things like online research or data entry or updating your CRM or, you know, trying, for the love of God, trying to become a graphic designer in Photoshop to design your logo on the cheap. You know, all these sort of different things that we just, you know, social media, that's a huge one. Managing email, you know, all these things we allow ourselves to get bogged down with what I call these busy tasks or these low-level tasks. And, 99.9% of the time, there's somebody else out there that can not only handle those tasks, but handle them just as good, if not even better than you.
So my audience are particularly authors and authors of fiction as well as non-fiction. And many people won't have a budget necessarily for this type of role. So authors will have potentially a budget for an editor and a book cover designer. And those are like the two non-negotiable aspects of a book, right? But what are maybe some of the other things that someone that's coming into this space, like, you know, is going, I really do need the help. But, what might be some of the things that they could use a VA for? I mean, you mentioned email there, which I still struggle with. I haven't moved that yet.
See, how many, I'm curious to know, how many emails each day do you get?
Too many.
Give me a number.
200.
Okay, so you average around about the same as me. So how many hours does that suck up out of your day each day to manage?
It's about 2 hours a day at the moment. And
so I bust through mine in less than 45 minutes.
Right, yeah.
And that's the reason why, is because I've got systems in place and people in place, or a person in place to manage that for me day to day. And I don't say this to gloat, but what I'm saying is that, you know, if I can do it, you can do it, anybody else can do it, you know, and that's just one particular task.
Yeah. And I guess, like, saying that, what's interesting, and I have just started to, for example, I forward now, whenever I answer an email that comes up a lot, I forward it to my VA and say, note that down. That's the type of response that type of email gets. So I'm getting there. So I guess this brings into the, what you just said, how much time. So people should be saying to themselves, how much, what am I spending my time on? Is that like, if you're going to have a client and say, how do we optimize your life? Is the first thing, what do you spend your time on?
Actually, the first thing I do, and I do handle a certain amount of coaching clients. I still love coaching one-on-one. I'll never stop doing it, but I can only really work with two or three people a month now. And you know, the first thing that I do when I start with a new client is I get them to sit down and do the three lists of freedom exercise, which I mentioned right at the beginning of the book, and it pops up quite regularly throughout the course of that almost 300 pages over and over again. And the reason why is absolutely detrimental to not do that particular exercise. It was the exercise that I did, and it didn't have the cool, sexy name when I was doing it back in late 2009, but it's what I did when I took my little sabbatical between Christmas and New Year 2009 with my wife, and we went away for a few days locally here in Cebu, and we stayed at a resort. And actually, I can show you right now, that was where the virtual CEO goal came out of place. This piece of paper right here.
Ah, lovely.
It's still on my desk. Still on my desk. And along with a piece of coral that we picked up when we were walking along the beach that morning. So it just goes to show you it's real. And so, you know, this three lists of freedom exercise, it's like a virtual brain dump. And what you do is you get a piece of paper and you write it, you draw a couple of lines down it, creating three columns. And this is life-changing. It changed my life, and it's changed thousands of others as well. Column number one, a list of all the things you don't like doing day to day, the stuff you hate doing, plain simple. But you have to do them because your business demands them of you, okay? The second column is a list of all the things that you can't do. Now, this is where superhero syndrome starts creeping in a little bit, because we believe we can do everything, right? But if you think deep down, we can't, and we certainly do struggle with certain things as well on a pretty regular basis. So you've got to be true to yourself and write those down on the second list. And then the third list is, you know, by far the most important. This is a list of all the things that you feel you shouldn't be doing as the person running your business, whether you be an author or whatever, it doesn't matter. What are the things you should not be doing day to day? And this is a tough one, because I often joke and say, you know, you need a glass of wine to do this one, because it's real reality kicks in. But you might like doing some of these tasks. You might actually be really good at doing some of these tasks. But the question, again, you've got to put your big boy pants on and say, should I be doing them? Is my time not better spent doing something better, something more high level, something more important to my core business? And that, you know, that's the exercise I get everybody to do right out of the gate with me.
No, that's really great. And then I think it's once you have that kind of list, then, as we said, you don't need one person to pick up everything else. Like, as I said, I have 13 different people now. And, you know, you might have one who's a transcriptionist, somebody else who does the email, somebody else who, you know, does formatting, that kind of thing. Yeah.
You're doing it right You're doing
it wrong
right.
First. Your book helped me.
Here. No, but you're doing it right. You see, that's what I call hiring for the role and not for the task. You know, I talk about the super VA and how, you know, one person would be, you know, be perfect if we could hire one person to do all of our editing, all of our video work, all of our podcasts, all of our blogging, all of our social media, all of our SEO, all of our web development, all our graphic design, and so on and so on and so on and so on. But they don't exist. They don't exist. You wouldn't hire a plumber to install your electrical components in your house, would you? So you don't mix and match those roles. And by hiring for the role and not for the task, you become very, very smart at delegating. And you can start at first just by with some of the job posting sites like, you know, Odesk or Elance or whatever. And, you know, I need a logo done. Boom. I need some transcription work done. Boom. I need a video edited. Boom. I need a book cover design. Boom. They're one-off tasks that you can delegate off to people. But obviously, if you're doing these things on a very regular basis, it's not a bad idea like you have to have people that are contracted and work with you over and over and over again.
And then I know people are going, but I can't afford this. That's what everyone's saying right now. How do you answer that question? Basically,
honestly, you know, my reply to that is always you can't afford not to, and I'm a big believer in that. As people wanting to build and grow our businesses, even if funds are minimal, you must invest those funds in the right way. Okay, after time, money is our second most valuable commodity, and we've got to make sure that we protect it and invest it wisely. If it's the difference between you hitting a writing deadline, for example, and getting your book to your publisher or getting it up on Kindle around the launch time that you said it was going to be, so you've got 5,000 people ready and waiting to buy it on your email list. If the difference is between hiring somebody to finalize the book cover design and getting it out on time, or messing around in Photoshop trying to be a graphic designer yourself to save a few bucks and then being late to the party and upsetting people and keeping people waiting, that's not good business. That's not good business. And I have found, and I hope your followers and your listeners and viewers don't get upset with me now, but I have found that the creative types out there, like writers, people that do, you know, music and video and all this sort of stuff, you know, designers, these people are sometimes very reluctant to have someone else do something that's a little close to them because they've got that creative juice in their DNA. But you've got to put your business hat on from time to time. And if there's a deadline in place, you cannot miss it. I've never missed a publishing deadline in my life, ever. And I never will. And if that means I've got to hire somebody and spend, you know, $100 for a cover to be designed, then that's what's going to happen.
Well, then can you give
any tough love there, but yeah, it is,
no,
what it is.
Your book did that for me and really kicked my ass and was like, what are you doing? You know, you call yourself a businesswoman and you just not that you said that, obviously. But, you know,
I think I probably did at some point.
Probably did. But can we go further in terms of cost? Can you give any indication? So what level, I mean, there are different levels of VA. How much would people be spending per hour on, say, someone to do transcription versus someone to handle email? Is there a range you can give people so they know?
There's always a range, but the range fluctuates, obviously. And someone might be looking or listening into this conversation, you know, a year from now, and these rates could be completely off. So there's a disclaimer for that. Mm. But I mean, you know, for simple transcription work, you can probably look at paying, you know, anything between $5 to $15 an hour. Right. You know, depending on the experience, whether they're a native English speaker, whether they're not, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, things like transcription, for example, I use speechpad.com, which is a fantastic transcription service. It's super cheap. It's like $3. What does it work out? $1 a minute. It's $1 a minute or $2 a minute or something like that. Mm. And, you know, if you've got like a 45 minute conversation like this that you want to have transcribed and then edited in for a book, it's like $40. It's $40. And, you know, and this 45-minute conversation is going to end up being around 6,000 to 7,000 words. Yeah. How long would it take you to sit and write 7,000 words? Mm-hmm. A lot more than $40 worth of time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a little indication right there. But things like managing email and that sort of stuff, you know, this is the type of thing that you've got to be very careful letting go of to the wrong person, obvious for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. right? So I would say something close and quite personal and quite, you know, important from an integral standpoint with your business, such as email, that's probably better off outsourced to somebody who's on your team as either a part-time, full-time position or just a pure-blown full-time, you know, member of staff. And I mean, you know, I have my VAs here in the Philippines. I also work with VAs. I've got one VA up in Maidenhead.
Oh, there we go. Good British name.
In the UK.
Name.
And another one over in San Diego in the United States. And those two, so the non-Filipino VAs, they handle anything written word for me. So they do transcriptions and they do podcast show notes for me. They might edit something. Like I did a presentation today for an online summit, which I recorded, and or the audio anyway, and I then sent that over to San Diego for my VA over there to transcribe for me, because I want to be able to sit there. And once she's transcribed it, she'll actually go through and edit it for me as well. And that will become actually a free ebook that I'm going to be giving away to build my mailing list. Mm. So these are all the little things you can do with VAs to really kind of maximize your output from a content perspective and not kind of just spin your wheels over and over again.
And actually, you've given a good tip there for people writing nonfiction books. I mean, I had this question the other day. It was, I want to write a book on this, but I'm not an expert. And you go and interview people and get them transcribed and pay, like you say, $40, whatever, per thing. You've got the basis for a great book, which is, you know, fantastic. So I wanted to also just ask you before we move on, one more question on the VAs. What do people get wrong when they do the whole VA thing?
Like, what is it with you and cans of worms today? What's going
like
on?
Two top things that people get wrong, apart from wanting one person.
Okay. Yeah, I would say the first mistake people make is that they don't pay people what they're truly worth. Mm-hmm. There's this stigma, and we probably got Tim Ferriss and a few other people to thank for this as well. There's this stigma out there that you can get a, you know, virtual assistant for $2 an hour in the Philippines or India or somewhere like that. That doesn't happen. It might have happened 7-8 years ago, but it doesn't happen anymore right now. You know, my staff would laugh at me if I said I was going to give you $2.50 an hour or something. They'd be like, what? Are you high, boss? What's going on, right? You know, it's not going to happen. So the first mistake is honestly not paying people truly what they're worth. That's the first thing. Just because it's virtual and at an arm's length doesn't mean that that should be a discounted service, not in my eyes anyway. And the second thing, and this is a really big one, is that people don't spend enough time training their VAs when they start with them. You know, even if they've got the skill set, even if they've got the relevant experience, even if they've got the mindset and the right communication skills to get the job done for you, they've never done it for you before. So you need to show them how you want something done. Very simple thing like how you want a blog post laid out. Why are you using, subtitles here and here? Why why is the last sentence of every blog post in bold? Well, it's a call to action. Okay, now I know why, boss. Thank you very much. You have to work with them and train them properly from the outset so they truly understand why you want things done, not just how to do them.
Mm. Yeah, and I've learned that too. And the more you can do that, then they get to know it, and then they're done. You know, they're ready. They can do it forever once you've trained someone in your way.
Yep.
And you know, in my experience with my brilliant VA and my other contractors, you know, it doesn't take long. If you hire someone and, like you say, pay them what they're worth, you hire someone smart, they will pick this up so quickly, and then you're like, why didn't I do this years ago?
Yep. I'd be kicking yourself. You'd literally be kicking yourself. Yeah. I mean, you know, it literally took me burning out. I'm talking like hospital time, antidepressants for almost a month, the whole kit and caboodle. It took that for me to realize that I was being a complete moron in the way I was running my business. And luckily, you know, nothing horrible happened to me in the process, but I was able to come out and as a caveat to that, I now work just 4 days a week, Monday to Thursday. I have a 3-day weekend, which my family adores me for. Mm-hmm. And I only actually end up working about 5 or 6 hours a day, Monday to Thursday as well. And it's got to the point now where if something lands on my desk or in my inbox, the first thing I say to myself is, can someone else do this? And so I've really become this, I've gone from full blown micromanaging nightmare to master delegator. And I wouldn't have it any other way now.
Yeah, and we should say that this is often a process for people over time. You know, it's not going to happen just like that unless you hit the wall like you did. For me, it's been over 18 months now of slowly moving things off my plate. So that's fantastic for sharing. So I wanted to ask you, I mean, you have a great podcast on your site. If you've also just started a new podcast with Pat Flynn, the One Day Business Breakthrough, and you actually had one of someone in our community, Shelley Hitz, who's in the author community.
Oh, fantastic. Shelley, yes.
Yeah, Shelley was on your show, one of the first people your show.
One of the first five, I believe. We opened with five shows, and yeah, she was in number five. Okay.
Yeah,
there you go. We've actually recorded, before it even went live, we recorded 10 shows. And we're recording a couple a week now for the next sort of month or a month and a half or so. So we've got a good springboard. So just in case one of us has to travel for a speaking engagement or something like that, we've got a little bit of a buffer in place there.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, that you also do this as a live conference and everything. I mean, you see the same problems over and over again. apart from outsourcing, what are like two of the biggest challenges that might be applicable to my audience of authors?
I think a lot of people struggle with the idea of putting their work out there for free. And I think probably writers, you know, can really qualify for this. You know, if I'm going to write, I might as well write and put it in a book and make some money kind of thing. I don't know if your community is like super money hungry or if they're a little bit more passion based. I don't know, but yeah. Okay. So I've really seen this development in the last couple of years because, you know, content marketing is so huge now that people have really jumped on that bandwagon. You know, this is no longer a buzzword. This is real business. And when Coca-Cola, one of the biggest, most profitable businesses on the planet, you know, when they put sugar in bottles with liquid and they make ridiculous amounts of money from it, it's madness. But when they, you know, when they actually release videos on YouTube saying this is our content marketing strategy for the world to watch and learn, you know, you have to stand up and pay attention. And people have been doing that, but there's this conflict inside of, I believe, every content, you know, creator and marketer, that, you know, where's that line between developing a fan base and providing value and doing it all for free, obviously, to getting people to buy my stuff, whatever that stuff is. And that's one of the struggles I've seen. And I think a lot of people are reluctant to either give stuff away for free or, on the flip side of that coin, start charging, you know, for anything. And I would say, you know, if you're on the fence for anything like that, genuinely jump off the fence, right? And you know, honestly, because the worst that can happen is there's a free piece of content out there that someone's going to pick up and enjoy and share. Or the other side of the fence, the worst thing can happen is someone's going to buy one of your books. You know what I mean? So I think that's one of the things that a lot of people are struggling with. Another thing is, and we see this over and over and over again, not only on the podcast, but also in the live event as well. People are not spending time growing their mailing list. Mm-hmm. It's 2015. Why don't you have an opt-in form on your website? You know, why is that not there? Are you mad? I mean, I see it every single time we do it. If we get 20, 30, 40, 50 people, I'd say if we had 100 people in the room, the percentage would be roughly the same every single time. there's just something about, you know, putting an opt-in form on a website and saying, give me your email address, that a lot of people are uncomfortable about. But the fact of the matter is, if you're doing business online, the success of that business, the health of that business is directly attached to your email list. And I'm not talking about the size of the list, because you can make great money with just a couple of hundred or even 1,000 people on your list, but just the way that you build it and the way that you grow those relationships with your community.
No, that's fantastic advice. I've been harping on about this for years and I still see it like you do. Okay, so just a couple more questions. You are a fellow Brit, obviously. You live in the Philippines. You've got a very international business. I talk a lot. What pisses me off about the publishing business is how it's so divided into territories, and most of the stuff online is out of America. And my real passion is kind of to educate people into the fact that there's this global market for books now. You know, mine have sold in 64 countries. We can publish globally. I wonder, you know, what, as you're an author as well, I know you're through traditional, but you also do a lot of self-publishing, I guess you could say that, with your content. What do you think is the kind of future of global business and selling to people in the Philippines, in Asia, in Africa? You know, what do you see as the growth outside America?
Well, I mean, it's everywhere. I mean, there's no doubt. I think people are jumping. They are jumping on the bandwagon now. I've seen it myself. I can tell by the way that, you know, when I'm speaking in Australia, I can see that people are, you know, they get the whole info product idea now, where 3 years ago they didn't want to give it a time of day. You know, when I'm in the UK, and, you know, we're quite conservative in the UK, and we're like sort of, you know, I'm going to keep myself to myself and all that sort of stuff, you know, and everything. But I now see in the UK that people are coming out of their shells more. They are getting a little bit more vocal. They are putting themselves up online and building brands and all this sort of type of stuff. So I think overall, globally, we're in a really, really good position from a publishing industry perspective. I think, you know, and I did. I went traditional with Virtual Freedom. And the only reason I did that was because it was just a goal. And I'm very goal orientated. So, you know, my goal was to have a traditionally published book with a publishing house in the United States. I achieved it. Will my next book be traditional? I don't think so. Just the way that things are developing, I can't see that happening, because I didn't have as much control on that process that I really wanted. The book could have been out a year earlier if I'd have self-published it. I would have been writing the second bloody book by now if I'd have done it. And ultimately, I would have made a lot more money, because I'll tell you something right now for a fact. I sold every single copy of that book that's been sold. We're up to 30,000 copies already. I've sold the large majority of them myself through my sheer out and out hard work and hustle. You know, it's tough to get true support from your publisher nowadays, from a marketing perspective. You know, they did great on every other aspect of the relationship. But no, overall, I think we're in a great position. I think that, you know, you're going to get a lot of people that are going to be flooding that self-publishing market with a lot of tripe. And that, you know, that might have a negative effect on it, but what it will also do is it will separate the, you know, the really good writers from the, you know, the tripey chaff writers that sure, you know, that honestly are just sort of maybe just out to make a quick buck or build a quick brand. But I'm excited about it. I don't know how do you feel about
it?
I'm curious.
Really excited. Super excited. I mean, I see the growth of sales outside America grow every month. You know,
no
I'm
doubt.
Getting paid from Brazil now, like, and Mexico. Yeah. You know, this wasn't happening before.
My blog readership has gone from 2 years ago being about 68% US based. To now just 52% US based. Now, I know these numbers because I just checked them at the end of December. And, you know, I've seen a lot more people from the UK, from Australia, from basically all over Europe now tuning in on my blog and subscribing and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. So you're absolutely right. Things are moving. You know, we're always a little bit, you know, a little slow on the uptake, you know, outside of the US with a lot of this stuff. But I think, I mean, the UK, I was back in the UK in April last year. I did a talk at the Google campus there, and I was amazed with the quality of entrepreneurs there. Like, they blew me away. So there's a really good scene developing in the UK right now. I'm pumped about that.
Yeah, fantastic. And then just on the book, you did a whole podcast about your experience, and I'll link to that in the show notes.
Oh, this is just recently, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And but I want, and it did, like you just mentioned, you didn't have much control, which as a guy with your own business must have been a nightmare. Was there anything else that you specifically learned from with the whole book process?
There was a lot. There was a lot I learned. You know, I honestly thought when I went into it, I honestly thought that I could kind of chop it up, the book itself, and just sort of write, you know, 60, 1,000 word blog posts and then just sort of slam it all together. Not quite. Didn't quite work out that way. And so that was the first thing I learned. You know, writing a book is nothing like writing a blog, fiction, nonfiction, whatever. The other thing was that, you know, and I discovered this pretty quickly, actually, because I had this whole system where I was going to go to a cafe for a couple of hours once a week and sort of hit and really go, you know, hardcore on the laptop. I'd get there and, I mean, writers, there was no writer's block. There was no block. There was nothing. I'd sit there like, oh, my God, I've got no idea what I'm doing here. So that the other realization was when it's time to write, write. And if you don't feel good about it, then don't force yourself into it. So what I did, because I was on deadline with my publisher in the US, I basically cleared my schedule for like 3 months, except for really important business calls or meetings or something like that. Everything was left clear. And except for sort of managing my email and, you know, updating my blog once a week, the rest of the time was just wide open for whenever that creative spurt came my way. And, you know, it'd be some days where I would sit down and I think, oh, that's a good idea. And I'd sit down and I'd write out 600 words and I'd be done. Hmm. But then there'd be other days where I would write 3,000 or 4,000 words because I was just in a zone. So that was the other thing, was really just don't force yourself into it. You know, when it's time to write, it's time to write. And lastly, marketing. Oh, my gosh. You know, I thought the hard work was writing the damn thing, and then the manuscript was you know, accepted. I got my check, and then the real work began. You know what I mean? So marketing was a whole different ball game, and we had a full plan in place and a great team, and we executed it well. And yeah, we did well. We were going for the New York Times. I'd be lying if I said we weren't. We fell a few thousand copies short in that launch week, but you know what, we still sold a whole bunch of books, and they were continuing to sell every day. And you know, every day I get a message or an email or a tweet or something from somebody who's picked up the book, Amazon review, whatever, and it makes it all worthwhile. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it is a great, it's a really good book. I highly recommend it to people. So where can people find you and the book and your business online?
Well, you know, everything I do is over at chrisducker.com. I'm a big Twitter fan. I spend a little bit of time each day on Twitter, so at Chris Ducker there. If they want the book, just obviously just go to Amazon and type in Virtual Freedom. Here, I'll give you a flash. Can I give you a flash?
Yeah, flash it.
Shameless plug. Paperback, audio CDs, ooh, just in case, nice. You're back in 2009. So the publisher.
Did you record that? Did you record it yourself?
No, I did not actually. I outsourced. I outsourced it. But when it turned up, I was like, oh my God, there's CDs.
I don't even have a drive anymore in my computer. Like, I couldn't play it.
I know. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, they got the rights sold, and it was what it was. But at the time when they really wanted to launch it, my publishers were like, we want to launch it, you know, by this. And I was like, you're mad. There's just no way I can record it by then. I'm out keynoting here, there, and everywhere last year. I was on a big, big push for the book last year. And so we ended up getting this guy called Gildart Jackson. He's a fellow Brit, and his TV credits include a bad guy in Charmed. So back in the day. So that's
wow.
I've never met the guy, but he did a half decent job in reading it.
Oh, that's super. Right. Well, yeah. Thanks. thanks so much for your time, Chris. It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, I had a blast. It was good fun.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.